This is the Conference Committee on Senate Bill 323, De-Engrossed. We are meeting at 8 a.m. in Hearing Room 350 on June 23rd, 1987.
Conference Committee on Senate Bill 323 will come to order. All members are present. And we will proceed and see where we go. We'll start off. And we're talking now about, start off by the Chair's going to move that in terms of the punitive damages that we adopt sections 3 and 4 of C engrossed. And this would include a deletion, I guess, of sections 1, 4, and 4A of B engrossed. You'll see it on page 2. In other words, the motion is to adopt sections 3 and 4 as shown on page 2. Any discussion? Who's opposed?
Well.
Go ahead and discuss it if you want. I'm going to try to save some time. I'll note for the record those who are opposed to any motion by anyone, and instead of calling the roll every time, because we'll be here forever if we do that, if that's all right with you.
And then
I'm not saying, again, I repeat, this does not lock you in, because it wouldn't be fair to lock you into piece by piece. We'll go back and we'll get locked in when we finally adopt this whole package, which I hope is going to be today for sure.
Okay.
That's the best way I can think of to work at it, though.
Bill,
go ahead.
The substitution of Section 4 and C for Section 4 and D is one issue. Section of 3 and C for Section 1 and D is a separate issue. And then I view Section 4A as a separate issue in itself, since that was not something you dealt with apparently dealt with in the Senate. I don't mean to speak for you. Perhaps you did.
No, we didn't.
And I just would look at it that way. So when you make your motion to substitute those two for all the fine work that the House did, 4A is something that I would have to see in the package. And I want, just so you know that. I think everybody occasionally is spoken for things that they absolutely must see, and that's one that I must see. And I know Senator Brenneman's spoken quite clearly about the supplemental hearing process in four. So
let me suggest this, Paul. Let me approach a little bit differently so that we can reserve for your own motion. If you want to make a motion of 4A of D, then you can do that. Let me start with section 2. In the C engrossed, I'm agreeable to removing that. Does anybody object to that? All right, that's done then. I would move sections 3 and 4. C engrossed is shown on page 2. Objections to that now, all right, Paul?
Well, I am.
Paul and John, record will show that they object to that. All right, we've got tentative agreement on that. Now, Paul?
I would move section 4A of the D engrossed.
Objections to that? 4A.
I would object.
Springer and Fry? All right, that's tentatively approved then. Anything else on that?
Mr. Chair, we'll visit these sections again.
Yes, we will.
If we need to.
If we need to.
But for now, to understand what we've done, we've adopted Section 3, Section 4, and Section 4A of D.
Right. That's correct.
Okay.
Okay, on page 4, are we agreed that they're the same in both versions? Are we agreed to adopt the language shown on page 4 of the Green Book? Any objections to that? All right, no objections to that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, David.
Section 5, I would move the Senate Bill 323C-65 amendments from LC, and I know there's another section that has to be attached, which replaces the Section 6 of both C and D and Gross, which I believe are the same.
Now, we're talking about the material shown on page 5 in the Green Book?
Yes.
Or the subject, you know, I showed in the plan. Okay.
You're adding this language.
I will. We've got LC 1593. That's the one that you moved. Do I understand that correctly?
I appreciate the move.
Is that this one?
No.
We're not dragging our feet. Well,
I will make the motion on the bottom part of that one. I believe the LC contains the top part that's not circled.
It's LC 65.
Okay. Then I will move the second, the bottom half as well, which is not in LC. That is my intention, anyway.
Well, what would you like now? The whole of dash 65?
The whole of dash 65 plus the language contained in the handout, which I believe council has.
I think we got that, didn't we, yesterday?
Yes.
All right.
And the circle, Mr. Chairman, the circle piece comes in after act on line 10.
Comma, act.
Yeah.
So this thing here is what we're concerned with, right?
Bottom part.
Right. That's the everyday, like aspirin was the point of our discussion.
The only reason I handed the LC out, I believe the top part is an LC form, but the circled part is not.
Well, does this piece here contain the 65 amendments plus?
Or
is this different from 65?
Chairman, I believe they're the same.
They're the same, all right.
It's organized a little bit differently in terms of its paragraphs, but section.
Substantively.
I believe substantively it would be the same.
All right. Well, can we...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just a clarification on the motion. We've accepted everything on... the motion is to accept everything on page 4, and what we're dealing with here is substituting on the product liability, which would be section 6. For both the D, and C, and Grossed, and what the fine representative is doing is to substitute that language.
That's what I understand, yes.
Okay.
So, can we designate, let's put, if it's accurate now, let's put 65-1 on this sheet here so that the record will reflect that the what we're talking about. 65-1. And it's Representative Dix's desire to substitute 65-1 for the Dean Gross version, which is shown on page 5. Okay, have I got that accurate now? All right. Discussion on that point?
All right. Bill?
Yes.
I think let the record show that I would prefer either C or D in Gross Section 6 to this, although I don't have a real strong objection to change depending on how the package falls together.
Well, you might want to object now then if you want.
Yeah.
And,
finally have object.
Right. Paul, what do you want to do on that?
Well, I would register an objection.
Okay. All right, that's shown by the record. Any other objections to that then? All right, that is tentatively adopted then. 65-1 amendment is tentatively adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, David?
I would move to adopt the de-engrossed cap on page 7, striking sub B under section 2, and changing the $550,000 cap to the cap that the Senate passed, which was $500,000.
Okay. Representative Dix's motion is to adopt the de-engrossed version as shown on page 7, omitting lines 6 and 7, and reducing the cap from $550,000 to $500,000. Any further discussion on that point? Any objections to that?
I would object.
Okay, Representative Springer's objection is noted. Otherwise, it's tentatively adopted. let's go to page 8. And,
Yeah.
I'd like, I don't know whether we've handed this out yet, but I have an amendment here on this that I'd like to have considered. I'm going to hand that down to Senator. I'll pass this down to Kathy. Yeah.
Senator.
Yes, go ahead.
I appreciate the fact that you're passing out your amendment. This could be the major judgment area as to how the whole package fits together and what happens. It might be easier if we went through the entire bill and then came back to this section. At least that would be my suggestion for the process.
I would concur in that.
Okay.
I think we can continue our rate of progress through the court portions of the bill and probably come to closure on most issues. And then if we were to return to joint and several, perhaps another issue or two, I think our work would be just about completed.
Well, fine. I'll defer to your judgment on that. And I would make, but there's another, I haven't given you the complete deal yet.
Well, I think there are a lot of little deals on this one coming
out. Sort of what we're bringing up.
You see on line 22, this is the, I've forgotten, Joyce, was this the task force version or was this an early Senate version, do you recall?
What, your several pieces that you have here?
I don't remember what.
Oh, that was actually the much debated, much maligned Hanby amendment, I think.
Oh, that's right. Well, I always liked you then on this amendment here, but the only thing is...
right, Senator Bradman, isn't that the one?
I can't remember where it came from.
On line 22, I don't intend 20, I intend 10%. So if you'll make that notation on... this is the proposal 10, I will
yes,
make.
Thank you.
You can call this the Joint Several Amendment of 311 under my name if you want to, but that's the only change. So we'll move on then.
Good.
This
that was worth one round.
Now, Council, do we have...
wasn't it?
Here we are on page 10. I would move the reinstatement of Section 12 of the C engrossed and the deletion of Section 8 of the D engrossed. Yes,
sir.
Paul, go ahead.
Senator, I was momentarily distracted, but I would like to move in addition to what I would like to move, I guess, would be the de-engrossed version, dropping out sub 3 of the de-engrossed and changing the last word on line 30 to voidable rather than void, which is an issue that we discussed at some length yesterday. And what that does, just so members are aware, is that would keep in the 24-hour back-out rule on the contract and require the an explanation process prepared, a standard process for the bar, so that people going into these complicated situations would have an model explanation.
Dick?
I appreciate the spirit of compromise once this is offered, and I guess I would pose as a friendly amendment whether or not we ought to apply some of these same provisions, perhaps not all, but some of the same provisions to the other side. It seems to me the protection that ought to be extended to the plaintiffs ought also to be extended to the defendants.
Well, there's no question that that's the only place that the restrictions and fee agreements would make any difference in insurance rates. Plaintiff's lawyers are the ones that are, they're the ones that are getting paid by insurance company. Plaintiff's lawyers don't get anything from insurance companies.
I think kind of what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Yeah,
here.
Right. Now, well, that's fine. Let me suggest also that on Paul's 24-hour back-out rule, that be applied to insurance settlements, too. That'd be all right?
No.
Oh.
You, Representative Springer. Yeah. Tread lightly upon a friendly amendment, and I think you tread rather heavily on it, Senator. I think I would rather move my motion independent, and then we could...
All right, let's work on that. What we're going to do is we'll take up Paul's suggestion first, and I'm going to be opposing his offer, and I would go back then if his fails to my original offer, but we'll take his first. Any other discussion or question on that?
Mr. Chair, operating under that spirit of compromise and not in total agreement with the section, understanding that we could visit the section again before we finish, I'm going to be supporting Representative Phillips' motion.
Okay. Let me ask this question. Any objection to Representative Phillips' motion besides me, Senator Cohen? Okay, we'll consider that his motion tentatively adopted, and we'll not even go to mine then, which would be not consistent with his. So,
Mr. Chair,
yes,
would it be appropriate at this time to make my motion? I don't think it was necessarily, even though it wasn't accepted as a friendly amendment, I'd be curious if folks are ready to deal with that issue, if we could, one way or the other, just whether or not we're going to apply this to both sides of the bar.
Well, let me suggest that that might be something that we could keep in mind. I wouldn't be inclined to stop at this moment because we're going to have to debate, you know, what the hourly rate ought to be or how that's going to work. And that might be something that we can consider before we're through. But can we move? Let's move on, and we'll kind of keep that in the back of our minds as a possibility.
Well, another option: plaintiffs get paid at the end of the case if the plaintiff's successful. Plaintiff's bar. It's been suggested that maybe one way to expedite the interest of the defense side would be to require that they not get paid until the case is closed.
That would expedite settlements for sure, wouldn't it? Sure, so, anyway.
I'm happy to do that. If we're going to be meddling around into contracting, this is there's no reason why you can't meddle around into insurance contracts with their lawyers as well as private parties contracting with their lawyers.
Well, okay, well, the only thing I would raise is, what about in-house counsel? Do you suspend somebody's paycheck while they're defending the corporate entity, perhaps, from action?
We could probably provide an exemption to in-house counsel.
Yeah. This would only apply to independent contractors. Well, okay, we'll keep that in mind and may come back to that. So, as of this moment, then, the de-engrossed version, with the exception of subsection 3 and the change on line 30 from void to voidable, is the committee's position. On page 11, collateral source, counsel, do you have that amendment that I suggested to rewrite that we could have before?
Sorry, that hasn't come up from LC yet.
All right, I would just as soon stay out of the damn thicket of collateral source, but if the committee wants to do it, I've got the proposal I make is substantially like what you find on page 11, only it's just rewritten, and you'll find that it's only there's not any change in substance, but it's just a rewrite of the form. But let's find out first if we're all interested in collateral source as an issue to be covered in Senate Bill 323. Yes, David.
Mr. Chair, it was a section that I was not thrilled with in the House, but recognizing that this is part of a package and there'll be things other people aren't thrilled with, but I am interested in keeping the language conceptually that was adopted in the House that allows discretion for the judge. I would not be interested in creating a shell situation for the judge. I think they should have that discretion. So if you have amendments that clarify the language, because I think there's some question as to whether or not the drafting is worthy of adoption, I don't have any problem with that. But I would have a problem if we tried to change the language to shall.
Well, what I've got in counsel tells me that it's still hung up in LC, but somebody's going to go down and pick it up. It's essentially what you see on page 11, and that's about it. So we can look at that later. If people feel a collateral source is an issue to be addressed,
well,
in this
Mr.
bill.
Chairman.
Yes.
I guess I want to make sure that the benefit, or that the people that are exempted looks a little more like what we considered on the Senate side, if we're going to go into this at all. And I'd rather look to an 11B, which I think is somewhere around here.
11B, I think, is around here.
11B should be right.
I'd like 11B with a May in there, if I'm going to deal with this issue. You ask for preferences. That's what the Senate was considering before we threw it out. That was in at one point, and with respect to Sam Dix's comments, I think it ought to be May. I think it clarifies a little bit.
Let me ask LC, have we got such an amendment prepared, or is one being prepared?
11B.
No.
No, I haven't.
LB is not LC.
It's not an LC form.
Are folks prepared to deal with that conceptually at this point, or would they... I don't know if this matter
has been
discussed, or would they, right, or would you prefer to hold this issue until we got a draft before us, Representative Dix?
Why don't we move on?
Yeah, I would prefer we hold it until the draft comes up. I don't have any problems with Senator Cohen's recommendation, but
I think I would concur also.
If we could get that in draft form and actually adopt it.
Okay, could that be ready afternoon, if assuming we may... Recess, I assume so,
because most of the language was in 323 originally.
There is one addition I would ask as a friendly amendment, and that's including the federal Social Security benefits, specifically.
In sub D,
as
at line 31.
Yeah. And that was suggested by counsel.
Yeah,
it wasn't clear if retirement would include that as well. There are some orphan benefits that are... included in Social Security as well.
Widows and orphans. Okay. Further discussion on this section in terms of any other issues? Hey, Senator Frye, while you were out of the room, we agreed that we would request LC prepare a draft amendment along the lines that Senator Cohen outlined, and we'll come back to that issue and vote on it when that draft is prepared.
Okay, I thought we would compare hers and mine. And
right.
Okay, very good.
So I think we're ready to move on to page 12, the injury or death during felony.
Okay. Yes, David.
I would move the adoption of the C engrossed version on the injury or death during felony.
Okay. Any further discussion on this?
I object to it.
You'll object to objects?
Let me just...
Yes, Dick, go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt the voting if that's what we were doing.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you want to go ahead and bang the gavel or whatever on that issue, substituting C for D, I can raise my comment after that.
Oh, you didn't want to comment on the...
No, I'm sorry. To...
Did you? All right. Well, the record will note that Representative Phillips and Senator Brenneman would object to the motion by Representative Dix to adopt Section 9 of C engrossed, found on page 12. That is tentatively adopted... by this committee, and Dick?
Well, I just was curious if there'd be any interest in pursuing with an amendment or consideration of a possible amendment. The issue I think we discussed yesterday, that I think the language in both versions kind of contemplates a trial within a trial, and the difficulty that poses in terms of increased costs in litigation. Mm-hmm. And substituting language that a conviction in a criminal proceeding could be introduced as evidence, certainly, and raised as a defense.
I like that approach, but let me see if I can't hone that down a little bit. How about making this thing read that it is a defense or a complete defense in a civil action for the defendant to prove that the plaintiff has been convicted of a Class A or Class B felony? Yes.
It seems pretty straightforward
and
simple. Now, you can make exceptions for, I think Paul and others may have, there may be some circumstances where conditions are possible, and I'd certainly be willing to recognize those exceptions.
That's a very rough way to say it. It needs a lot of fine-tuning, but go ahead, Paul.
Well, I think Dick hit the point that there are times, and there certainly would times, when a conviction wouldn't be available as a recourse, and that therefore the state perhaps would become involved, and I don't think we would want that to happen. And there's also the issue of plea bargaining that would bring it down, that could eventually screw up the issue. You could be charged with one A or B, and then by the time it was finally adjudicated, bargain it out for C, and then what happens in that case?
I would suspect that most of these cases would be brought by the state of the deceased person, and so therefore undoubtedly there wouldn't be very many criminal convictions because the person would be dead. He'd be shot. Somebody would be dead, so there probably would be never a chance, you know, to go to court and convict him of anything.
Well, that's it.
That's the problem, isn't it?
That raises that's a major problem.
That's right. You put your finger right on it. If the guy, you know, if the actor or the if the plaintiff or the person who would be the plaintiff is not alive, there would be no criminal case. So that would preclude any defense in those cases where the potential plaintiff is dead from being shot in the back by the irate farmer or policeman. But anyway. Okay, well, do you have anything specific on that, Dick, or do you just want to kind of bring that up as a possible thought?
Well, I'm more than willing to look at the amendments that Paul suggested. If there's any way counsel can kind of get something drafted up that would say it would be a defense to show the conviction, and that would be pretty easy to do. I mean, that's something you'd handle on a summary judgment, right?
Okay. Well, that might be all right.
And then Paul's exceptions. I'd want to hear from the DAs before we did anything that might affect the plea bargain situation.
Well, what happens, I mean, I'll ask you litigators on this one. If you wait for a criminal trial to run its course, you could delay the civil process considerably. Would it be the first conviction, perhaps, or what happens if the fellow appeals that conviction? It's not finally adjudicated, so therefore the civil proceedings may be delayed for a considerable amount of time, if not years.
Well, I don't think the civil thing would be delayed, but you wouldn't have you wouldn't really have your criminal conviction unless, well, you wouldn't have it because until it's finally resolved on appeal. So if there is an appeal, that wouldn't be available as a defense in the civil case, because that you couldn't just delay the civil case waiting for this criminal matter to get resolved. So you'd have to go to trial in the civil case, and that element wouldn't be available to you.
Well, it's hardly fair to the defendant in that case of the civil action.
I agree.
Well, Senator, let me pose this. The matter could be on appeal, obviously, and the jury could be informed of that as well. At the same time, they were informed of the fact that there had been a conviction. The trier of fact could be informed of that.
Yeah, I think some of these questions raise the issue, or point up, I suppose, what kind of a morass you may be getting into when
well,
you start fussing around with this.
Mr. Stuff. Chair, I don't know how much time we have to spend on this. I was hoping that it's a difficult area. I think you're right. I don't want to hold this up too long, because I sense that we want to try to get as much closure as possible today. If there were any way we could work up language that would be acceptable to Representative Phillips, I'd sure be glad to make the motion.
All right, well, let's try that. See what we can do on that, Paul.
Well, Bill, you should be aware there were a couple of issues that in some people's minds might not be directly reflected on tort or insurance costs or else, but the felony issue, whether you think that the license to hunt him down and shoot him was a big issue. The other issue that we've already covered dealt with the contingent fee agreements and that issue that, you know, we through dropping that out, and I appreciate the Senate's concern about it, but the House members that at least I represent, these were major issues to them.
Yes, Joyce.
Are they major enough to go to 10 in the joint ceremony? I mean, I'm serious about that. That's the kind of stuff we need to kind of get out on the table. Do you think that they're
Pardon me. Joyce, could you repeat that question?
I asked if it would be major enough so that we could get the joint several back to 10.
Well, if the mood of the committee is going to soften them up, it's major enough that they wouldn't even consider reducing from 20, I'll tell you that.
Well, of course, it's my...
It's hard for me to see this big issue.
Well, I can't see this big issue either, but and if it had been my motion, I would have moved to drop the whole subject out, but... Okay, I think we kicked it around long enough to kind of know where we are. Let's move on to something else.
Well, we have adopted Section 9, and then we'll come back with
We've adopted Section 9 on a daily basis, and we're coming back to it. And we're going to work on, if Paul wants to pursue that idea of his, we can work on that. That shouldn't be too hard to come up with something.
Eric, can you try and get something drafted up on that?
I'll have to talk to you afterwards.
Okay.
But we can draft something.
All right, page 13 now. Mr. Chairman.